It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And as we promised last week, as we talk this week, we can now officially say next week it's spring training. That means we will have all kinds of news as we start getting position battles and injury updates and all. But the bigger news in fantasy, Fred, and it's something you had a big part in, is MLB.com's fantasy preview dropped. So we'll be talking a lot about that. How was that to put together and to make all that happen?
Yeah, it's a monstrous project, and it starts, to be honest, before the World Series even concludes. I mean, we're generating the lists and starting to figure out where players belong in October, and then just runs all the way through the winter. So when it goes live, as it did on Monday, you know, it's really exciting for us to see the fruits of your labor, although the work really isn't done because we update it, you know, once or twice a day all the way until the start of the regular season. So you almost feel like the project's done when it goes live, but then you realize it's not close to done, but it's still exciting to see it out there now.
All right. Well, we will talk some more about that in a little while, but first we will, as we have gotten into the habit, we will start with some of the transactions this week. The first that comes to mind, the first we have written down on our sheet here, is Tyler Clippard going to Arizona. I guess the biggest question there is how he gets used, because is it fair to say if he doesn't get saves, that guy with declining strikeout numbers and in that ballpark is kind of a stay away?
Yeah, for sure, and he's already said that he's pretty comfortable with starting the season in a setup role and see where they go. And, you know, I know fantasy owners, and I feel like even baseball fans, don't get excited about Brad Ziegler as their closer because of that super low strikeout rate. At the same time, Ziegler gets the job done. He converted 30 out of 32 saves last season, and he generally keeps the ball in the yard. So he might even be a better fit for them in the ninth inning than Clippard. I think a lot of people were excited about Clippard, thinking maybe he could be their closer. I don't really think that he will be.
Yeah, I mean, I personally, I know he's one of those guys that we've kind of waited to fall apart forever. He's one of those guys that seems like for 3 years now we've been saying, well, look out, he scares me. And maybe sometimes those guys just never do crumble, but he was a little disconcerting last year. I would not want to be the team or the fantasy owner counting on him to be a big part of anything this year.
Yeah, and I mean, at this point, he'll just be an NL-only pick, and that's fine if someone wants to pick him. And NL-only as a handcuff for Ziegler is probably his best fit. I do think over the years, you're right, we keep waiting for him to fall apart, and I feel like that tends to happen with those really fly ball prone pitchers. Chris Young, Josh Tomlin are a couple others that come to mind right away, where, you know, the FIP always looks really bad, and then everyone's waiting for that regression to come. But for a lot of them can return in a good role, can return fantasy value before that happens, because they usually keep their whip down, because the BABIP usually stays pretty low. But with Clippard, it's just because of the role. If they put him in the ninth inning, I'd be interested, but I just don't see that necessarily happening.
And the thing with Clippard, and look, we probably already talked more about him than merited here, but the thing about him is, because of that, and because of again, the combination of pitcher and ballpark and a lot of things, even though he's the guy with the experience, I'd be kind of skeptical that if something goes wrong with Ziegler, he's the guy to step in anyway. I can definitely see a scenario where if that happens and we're talking May or June, I'm not entirely convinced that Clippard will have lit it up enough to move into that. I'd be sort of skeptical that he's even the guy that moves in if an opening comes at some point during the season.
No, that's an excellent point. I mean, I feel like if it was tomorrow, you know, if Ziegler showed up at spring training and had a sore elbow or something, I feel like then they would go to Clippard because of the experience. But you're right, it could be Hudson or someone like that if it happened, you know, midway through the season, who's just out-pitching, out-performing Clippard, and maybe Clippard isn't the automatic. I think right now he is, but you're right, this isn't a great environment for someone who's pitched in pitcher-friendly parks for most of the recent seasons.
And to move to another, again, most everybody big name is off the board now. But, you know, I really liked last year. Matt Latos was, he underperformed his peripherals last year in Miami and then just imploded after he was dealt. He goes, I think this is an interesting mix. Now, again, you're not going to overbid. You're not going to be stupid on him. But as a last pick flyer, he's an interesting guy to me because of the Don Cooper factor. And this is something we talked about with Surge and the Pirates, that it's not just the coach. It's because not every coach can fix every pitcher, but when you've got a guy who's that established in an organization, and this is, again, the same conversation we have with Surge, you got to think that Don Cooper in the front office had this conversation, and Cooper said, yeah, I want my hands on that guy. And that gives me some confidence that, maybe there's a fit here. Again, I don't want to oversell the guy, but are you with me that, Latos is at least an interesting flyer guy because of that club?
I think Latos is an interesting flyer because his career numbers are so good. Like, this is someone who's been a difference maker, not just a pitcher in fantasy leagues, like a difference maker. Career, 3.51 ERA, 1.18 whip. Those are terrific ratios for someone you can get near the end of your draft. So, I mean, the bounce back potential is really high. Because they bid such a small amount of money for him and it happened so late in the winter, I wondered sometimes if it was just like two people looking for a dance partner. You know, the White Sox looked at their rotation and thought, Eric Johnson, John Danks at the back end, like, we need someone else. All right, we'll give Latos a shot. Like, I felt like when we talked about Searidge and, John Neese, because that was a trade and they traded Neil Walker, that maybe there's more interest there. And the White Sox maybe were just looking for someone who can give them innings. But what makes me interested in Latos, I just can't give up on someone who's not old and has really low career ratios.
Yeah, again, I remember tweeting at some point in June or July that some smart team was going to get a tremendous steal when they picked up Matt Latos from the Marlins. Now, that goes down with my I'm starting to believe in Vernon Wells a few years back as some of my worst predictions in, my career in baseball. But, yeah, I agree. He's an interesting guy, and unless he's just broken, he's somebody that I'll have an eye on. Not a lot else transaction-wise this week, but Yovani Gallardo is getting close to a deal in Baltimore. I like Gallardo. I think he will make the Orioles quite a bit better, actually, if that gets done, because he replaces Mike Wright and because they need innings and they need to take some strain off their bullpen. So in that regard, I think he'll make them significantly better. I am not crazy at all about Yovani Gallardo in yet another year older in another hitter's park in the American League. I know he did that last year. But every year it makes me a little more nervous. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I thought that he would have a lot of trouble last year with the Rangers, and he didn't. So, you know, just like you were saying last summer with you and Latos, like, I was wrong on Gallardo last year. Sometimes when you're wrong on a player, you know, you reevaluate and you say, okay, I was wrong. I have a different outlook on this player so far. To be honest, I haven't convinced myself that I was wrong on Gallardo. I think it just didn't all add up, you know, where I was thinking last year, but it could add up in that way at any time. I just see him in a hitter-friendly park in the American League as a pitcher with an ERA in the fours, and he usually has a high whip also, and his strikeout rate's not very high, so then he's just an AL-only guy. I just don't believe whether he stayed with Texas or in any situation like that, I don't think he can repeat what happened last season.
Yeah, I agree. But again, you know, this is one of those where you differentiate what you're talking about. Because again, I think he's a really nice pickup for the Orioles because of what they have and what they need. Our other news this week, Evan Gattis undergoes surgery, going to miss at least the beginning of spring training. How much does that worry you?
Not a lot. In fact, it might create a nice buying opportunity where just a lot of teams in your draft are scared away from Gattis because of that. I mean, he's their DH, so he doesn't have to field. He just has to get himself back into shape enough to bat four times a game. So I'm not really worried about it. They're thinking, you know, maybe opening day, maybe sometime in April. Evan Gattis is someone I can live without for a few weeks, especially in April when your team's typically at its healthiest. And he's in your utility spot anyway, so you can replace him with anyone, you know, from your roster. So from that perspective, I feel like I would only downgrade Gattis a very small amount. And, like I said, might actually be looking to pick him up at a bit of a discount if there are a lot of owners in my league thinking, oh, I just don't want someone who's hurt at the start of the year. This isn't like drafting a guy in the second or third round who's hurt at the start of the year. Like, Gattis is going to be a mid-round, and maybe he falls, you know, in towards the later rounds in some shallow leagues now.
How much do you like Gattis, though? Because I think it's sort of an interesting question. He's a guy, you know, you watch him hit, and he actually, watching him hit seems to have an idea to play. He doesn't look like an all-or-nothing guy, though there's certainly some of that in his production. But, you know, you're talking about a 250 lifetime hitter, a guy who's hit, even in a full season last year, 27 home runs is not bad. But I feel like maybe the name and the story are outstrip the production a little bit. I'm not down on him, but I'm not crazy about him. How do you kind of assess Gattis as he goes into what should be his second season playing 150 games?
Yeah, I think last year we were all a little disappointed. I mean, the book on Gattis last year around this time was because he didn't have to catch anymore, he was going to have a larger volume of workload and not that stress, that we were going to see 30 homers for sure. We didn't quite. I owned him in some leagues last year. He was really inconsistent and very frustrating to own. There were weeks where you just felt like a genius for having picked him, and then there were months where you just wanted to trade him for anything. So from that perspective, you're right. I think the hype with Gattis has kind of cooled now. You know, we have him in our player preview at 194th. So, I mean, if you're looking now, you're thinking, like, he's one of the last hitters on your team. I don't mind him in that scenario, but I think I'm maybe done hoping for the 33 or 34 homer season. Although that being said, I just said he's streaky. Like, you never know when, I guess, when he could have just one monster year.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing with a guy with those kind of tools and at his age, it wouldn't shock anybody if he just went berserk this year. You just wouldn't want to be counting on it. You'd like to be surprised by it. As we talk about drafts and drafts approach, one of the big questions is who is number one overall? We had a piece on that on MLB.com this week. We certainly spent a good bit of time talking about it. We've talked about it here before. And the start with is there are three main candidates. It seems like it's a question of Harper, Trout, or Goldschmidt. You and I have examined that some. I don't know that we need to tread that territory again, but one of the things that came up in some conversations with my colleagues in MLB.com is if you wanted to make a case for somebody else, if for some reason you thought that there was an argument for someone else, and there are two guys that we kind of came up with in that, and they are Carlos Correa and Clayton Kershaw. What do you think? Do you think there is a case for either of those guys if you were just valuing things differently, if you were so convinced that nobody else comes close to Kershaw as a starter, nobody else comes close to Correa for a combination at shortstop, which of those two guys do you like more, and do you buy that there is at least a case if you want to go at it a different way for one of those guys, number one overall?
Yeah, I think the case actually for Kershaw is quite strong and depends on your league format. In a head-to-head league where starting pitchers are a little more valuable, then he's a really good candidate to go first overall. In a roto league, maybe not quite as strong, but, I mean, a lot of people draft in the first round off the following theory. Which player is the least likely to bust, right? There's that old fantasy theory that says you can lose your league in the first round, but you can't win it in the first round. Well, I mean, which player in baseball is more likely than Clayton Kershaw to be awesome this season? You know, I know he's a pitcher and there's lots of pitchers available, but I mean, you lock him up in the first round, he's probably going to be awesome this season. I think you can justify him pick number one. Correa, I'm not quite as sure, just because the sample size is smaller. I get that he's a really big advantage over every other shortstop. At the same time, when you, like, unless he goes really high, like I'm thinking 35 homers, 25 steals, I feel like he might need to go to that territory. Or he pushes the batting average north of 300. Maybe that could be at 30-20 and then a 300 season. Then I think you could talk about it. So you'd have to be, like, really, really optimistic on Correa in his first full season. Do you think he could accomplish numbers like that this year? I mean, he could, I guess.
I think the thing that I don't know about the power this year. That's the one that I have the harder time seeing. Of course, we said that about Trout, too, but you know, the things that I could see the average getting a bump. I could see the steals getting a bump. He's such an unusual guy because of that broad base of ways he can help you. Again, I can see the case. I'd much rather be picking at 5 or 6 and have him still there than have that question. You know, I think where he's an interesting question is maybe 3 or 4. And you know, we have him 6 overall, I believe. I think where that becomes an interesting question and that whole positional utility and all of that is you're looking at, you know, we've got Donaldson 4, and Donaldson has some real advantages with the lineup, obviously. That's the thing with him. But then to me, you do have a question. Do you want to be the person who missed out when Correa just goes absolutely supernova on the league?
For sure, and that's your goal, really, is to win your league. So I can see it from that angle. I think we can agree that Correa probably has one of the highest chances of the first rounders to bust because he has the least amount of experience. If he did have some sort of sophomore slump, everyone would say, "Oh, okay, well, that's totally possible." It wouldn't diminish his long-term, you know, skill set or anything, but it could happen. I do think this guy's a special talent, and I can see the attractiveness of saying, "Hey, I got by far the best shortstop in the first round, and now I do not have to touch a position that does not have a lot of attractive options for the rest of my draft, and I can focus in on everything else. I totally get that. I think he belongs. Like you said, that's a nice spot this year, that 4, 5, 6, 7 spot where you can look at guys like Kershaw, Donaldson, and Correa. I think those are nice draft picks this year. The top is always nice, but the middle of the first round is pretty nice this year too.
One more before we get deeper into the preview. Let's say 1, 2, 3 go as expected, and you're in a conventional roto league. I may know the answer to this because our preview has Donaldson rated 4, but just you personally, you're sitting there at the table, Donaldson, Correa, Kershaw, Stanton. Who out of that bunch do you like the most personally? Who's the guy out of that bunch that you wouldn't be able to pass on at that spot?
Yeah, I'd take Kershaw, actually, 100%. And it's nice that you saw the preview and figured I'd go Donaldson. I can make the argument for Donaldson for sure. Just me and the way I often will draft, I have no problems with taking pitchers in the first or second round if I like the value, and I love the value with him. And for the reasons I mentioned, I just don't see. He has a sub-2 ERA over the last 3 seasons. Like, that's incredible. And he's still in his prime. So, I mean, yeah, I would go with him, and then I can feel free to load up on hitters with maybe my next 3 or 4 picks to make up for not getting that one stud bat. Yeah, I would go with him, and I would probably go Donaldson next. I just really like the security of him in that lineup, and then I would probably go Correa as the next pick.
That makes sense. So let's get on a little more with the MLB.com Fantasy Preview, which launched this week with tons of rankings and stats and all of that fun stuff. We talked in advance of this about a few guys. I'm just going to kind of go down from the top of the board to the bottom with interesting guys. And one really interesting one is Andrew McCutchen, who is entering his age 29 season. He is not an old player. Excuse me. Yes, entering his age 29 season. He is not an old player at all. And yet there are some things that happened last year in his game. Well, look, he had a significant slump, but across the board, there were some things that declined. He lost 20 points in batting average relative to the previous 3 years. He had his lowest steal total of his career by quite a bit. And the home runs dipped a little, though not a lot. It looks like at this point he's a 20 to 25 home run guy. He's only hit 30 once. Do you see a bounce back guy, or do you see the beginning of decline? I mean, we've got him at 13. He's a guy who not that long ago would have been a lot higher than that. Just personally, what's your kind of take on McCutchen entering this year?
Yeah, I don't see him as a guy in decline. I do think the steals can bounce back a little bit. I don't think we're going to see like a 25 steal season from him again. That's just my gut. I just don't see him running a lot from here on out. I think we can see a 15 steal season, maybe 17 or something like that. I find him a really nice, safe option later in the first round. I would take him a little higher than 13th overall. I understand why he's 13th. In our rankings, because the upside of McCutchen isn't incredible when you compare the upside of, you know, Arenado and Chris Bryant and some players like that. But I feel like the floor with McCutchen is really, really high. He's durable. You know, he's going to hit around 300, probably around 90 runs in RBIs, 20-something homers, you know, 10 to 20 steals. It's a really nice package from your first-round pick. So people love to hit a home run in the first round, but I really like him as a first-rounder this year. But I don't like him anymore in the top 5 or 6 unless for some reason I can get convinced that he's going to steal 20 bases.
It's interesting you mentioned the steals, and that's obviously the most eye-popping thing. But say he's still at 11, 12 steals, but he gets back to 310, 315. I mean, that's as much a part of this as anything, isn't it? Just the fact that 310, 320 is so hard to find that even 290 is a little more pedestrian. I guess what I'm saying is, if I tell you he's going to hit 310, 315 again, but the steals aren't going to bounce back, how much more do you like him?
Yeah, I do like him more. It's more like if he's, okay, in the first round, most of the players are going to get you, you know, 90-plus in both RBIs and runs, and he has never really posted monster totals in those categories, like the 110 or something like that some of the gut sluggers will get into. I would need to feel, I think, to push him back a little higher. If he's not going to bring the steals back, I need to maybe have some reason to believe the power is going to go higher, and I don't think that's probably going to happen, especially this home park. So I feel like I need to see him as a higher than 300 hitter who could hit 30 home runs. You probably have to go there to start competing with the Machados and other players like that who kind of fall in the 7, 8, 9 range of draft. Rizzo, who we talked about last week, like there's just a lot of really enticing options there. I took McCutchen second overall in labor last year, the labor draft, which is next week, you know, for this season. I took him second overall last year because I felt like he was so safe. And then he turned out to be, like, not completely disappointing, but mildly disappointing. So I don't know if he can get back to that level.
A couple other things I want to get to from the first glance at the preview. One thing that I thought was really interesting, we've got a cluster of starting pitchers between 35 and 40, and really there are a couple others around that. But we've got 35, Gerrit Cole, 36, Zach Greinke, 38, DeGrom, 39, Keuchel, 40, Kluber. That's an interesting bunch of guys who sort of present in different ways, whether you're looking for innings in bulk or rates. How do you differentiate between that group of starters? And if you want to throw in David Price a little before them and Jose Fernandez a little after them, there seems to be a group of starters around that 30 to 40 kind of range. How do you differentiate between those guys?
Yeah, there's not much to pick from, you know, between them. I mean, if you want to look for tiebreakers between them, you can try to assess which ones are, you know, the least likely to get injured. And I know all pitchers could get injured, but at least the ones of the best track record. For example, like, say, Kluber having just a little bit of injury trouble late last season could be a bit of a red flag. I mean, but it's not a significant one, really, right now. You could look at that. You could also look at the National League, American League thing. There's a lot of non-competitive teams in the National League this season, so maybe you want to pull your ace from Cole or DeGrom, someone like that, who should get some juicier matchups than the AL guys. But in general, especially if I was picking in the middle of a draft, it would be really nice to just watch that group deplete and then pick one off near the end and not really worry about which one you get, but get one. So, you know, when it comes to your pick, if there's still four or five left, let it ride. And if there's one or two left, then go ahead and grab one, whether that's in round three or round four or round five. It's harder if you're picking on the end because you can miss the whole run. I'm assuming you don't already have a Scherzer or an Arrieta, but I think that might be how I address that grouping.
One specific guy in that bunch that I wanted to ask what you think about, because I find him a fascinating guy, and that's David Price. Price, I think, has this reputation as a lockdown annual Cy Young contender. And the numbers don't exactly bear that out. I mean, the strikeouts are always high, but you look at Price's career, and just year by year, just ERA, which I realize is flawed, but 2.45 last year, 3.26, 3.33, 2.56, 3.49. Now, that's a really good pitcher, and that's a guy I would take on my team, especially with his durability, with the way he's considered to be as a teammate and all of that stuff. But I feel like there's a little bit of a degree to which the performance doesn't quite match the reputation with Price. How much do you like Price going into this year and with another new club?
Yeah, I like him in that group that we discussed, but you're right. I do think Price sometimes gets a little overrated because he tends to have that monster year every 2 or 3 years. If you look at his career numbers, 3.09 ERA, 1.13 WHIP. Really good numbers, but not rare territory. And that's, I think, what we should expect from him. Something around a 3 ERA and a 1.1 WHIP. That puts him in the tier with the guys we talked about, but I don't see him as ahead of those guys. I think he's in them. Maybe he gets ahead of them on his past durability and being able to go out and be effective every year, whereas some guys like DeGrom haven't done it for as long. But yeah, I do think he can be a little overrated, and maybe even the free agency makes him even more overrated, where you just see a great finish last year. I mean, he wasn't great in the postseason, but a great finish the regular season last year with the Blue Jays. So he got rid of that whole he can't pitch in a hitter's park thing. And then the monster contract, you think, well, this is a guy I've got to get. Like, he's clearly better than those other guys. And he's really not. He's an ace, but he's not a top 3 or 4 starter.
Another guy that, while we're talking about reputation and performance and starting pitchers, we have Felix Hernandez, who was a guy that, you know, 2 years ago was a first-round candidate. We have him 64 overall coming off of a single down year. I mean, you go back to 14, and Felix Hernandez had 248 strikeouts and a 2.14 ERA and was appointment television. He has a bad year, and by his standards. Does this reflect just sort of, again, one of those guys that we kind of were waiting for him to start showing signs of age, or how do you sort of resolve the fact that it really is one down year with how low we have Felix ranked?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple things that make me a little concerned with him. The one that people have talked about for years is, you know, he had massive workloads. Like, we're talking like four seasons in a row at one point with more than 230 innings. Like, that's a career high for some pitchers. He did it 4 years in a row at one point. And when that was all going on, a lot of people would say in the background, like, this is going to catch up with him at some point. So then when it did a little bit last year, and he was inconsistent last year, there were some really ugly starts that makes you worry a little bit. The reason that I think I'm a little down is his career WHIP is 1.17. So that's not a really helpful mark for a mixed league team. And that's his career numbers. And he's had a really great career, but he hasn't consistently really keep the bases as clean as some of those other aces. So I get, like, coming off 2014, why he was ranked so highly last year. And he could bounce back. Are you also concerned about him? I mean, if you are, is your concern the workload, or is it the inconsistency last year?
I think it's just one of those where I think it's exactly what you're saying. Because he was worked so hard, you just waited so long for that. You know, there's a little bit of a, and I realize in some ways there's no parallel at all, so I want to be clear about that. It's a little like Sabathia, where you just, you sort of knew it was coming, and he can still be a very good starter, but you just can't shake the idea that this was a guy that once it started to go, it might not come back because, again, as you say, he works so hard. I hope it does. Boy, is he a fun pitcher to watch. But it's not going to be shocking if from here on out he's merely a very good starter rather than a Cy Young candidate, one of the best in the game.
Yeah, the name that comes to mind with me is Verlander, in the sense that Verlander also had that, you know, like 4 or 5 year stretch of really high innings totals. And people were saying the same thing in the background, like, is this going to catch up with him? And then it did. And now he's maybe coming out of it, or maybe learning how to pitch differently to use what he has now at his disposal. And I wonder maybe if Felix will go through some of that, maybe a bit of an adjustment period, or a bit of it. Maybe he'll just hit a new level that's a little lower and stay there. Or maybe he will maybe bottom out at some point, and then that's the season you don't want to have him. And then, like Verlander started to last year, maybe come back a little bit and start to find a new way to thrive. But that's always been the guy that I kind of think of the two of them together, and they almost had that run at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting frame to look at him in. One more from the preview, and look, we'll be coming back to this over the coming weeks. One more before we start looking at second base. Hanley Ramirez, we have ranked 133 overall. I have absolutely no idea what to do with Hanley Ramirez, which I guess is reflected in his being ranked not crazy high, but not off the board. What do you make of Ramirez?
Yeah, I thought that Ramirez was going to be one of my draft targets this year. Like, I really thought the price would be so low, and because of the potential, that he's someone I would target. When I've done some early mock drafts or regular drafts, I find he's still going too high for my liking, because I'm just not sure. You're right, we don't know what to make of him. But we don't know what to make of him from two standpoints, and that's what concerns me. We don't know if he's going to stay healthy. That's always a concern with him, and especially lately. But we also now don't know how well he's going to play. A few years ago, the question was, is he going to stay healthy? But if he did stay healthy, you knew you got 20-plus homers, 20-plus steals, a .300 average. We're not there anymore. Like, it's like, what's it worth to me to take a chance on him and hope that he is healthy? And is it worth 20-something homers and, like, 10 steals, 15 steals, and now that he's playing eligible at outfield and he'll be eligible at first base, is that's not really that valuable at those positions.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and yet, you know, he's a guy that if he were to roar back and hit 300 and hit 25, 30 home runs, it wouldn't be shocking. But I think the bigger thing that you'd be worried about is he hits 310 and hits 20 home runs in the first half, and then it falls apart in the second half due to health performance. He's just a baffling guy. Is he one of those guys, to some extent, it's just kind of your own gut, you take the information in, and it's just a matter of how much the individual person likes him?
Yeah, probably. I think you probably project what you're comfortable with and see where he falls in your rankings, and that's kind of what we did for the preview. And then, you know, if someone wants him more than you, Really, you can't go into your season anymore thinking I need Hanley Ramirez to win my league. Like, if someone wants him more than you, they can have him. It is the reason I can't stay away from him, and the reason I was a little interested in him last year, that's a great environment if he does come around. Like, that could be a really, really good lineup. And if he hits, like, fourth or fifth in it, you know, like, there's a lot to like. There's a lot of potential. With him not running as much anymore and the injury concerns, and if he was shortstop eligible, like, he'd still be worth so much. But he isn't. So, yeah, you're right. He is baffling. And you're right. Maybe someone you draft, if he gets off to a good start, you trade him. But if you draft him, you probably want to keep him because you're really high on him.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to second base. This is another one of those where tier one on your listings is one guy. It's Jose Altuve. That makes sense. We have Altuve ranked very highly in the MLB.com rankings. We have him ranked 10 overall. What do you think you get from him? Do you think he's going to – I guess the biggest question is, do you think he approaches the modest little power burst he showed again?
Yeah, I do feel like that's possible. He made a little bit of a shift in approach last year, hit a few more fly balls. He's also at that age where a guy could add a little bit of power still, and he did last year. Like, it was almost kind of right on cue. So, you know, whether he hits 11 homers, 13 homers, 14, 15 homers isn't, like, a big difference. I do feel, though, like, you're not going to get 5. You're going to get 10-plus, and that does matter for sure.
And one of the things that jumps out about Altuve is 147, 152, 158, 154 games. This is a guy who takes the field, plays a lot, and so gets you those counting stats where sometimes the speed guys, you know, you're not counting on. You know, he gets you 66 RBI last year, 86 runs. He does a lot of different things.
For sure, and in the first round, you want a durable guy. That's one of the appeals of Donaldson for me, too, you know, who we talked about earlier. Like, getting a durable player. I know that, you know, Matt Kemp for a while was really durable, and then all of a sudden he wasn't. So when he was a first-round pick, but, you know, Altuve, the durability matters, and the position eligibility matters a lot. Not quite as much when we talked about Correa earlier in the show, but same thing for Altuve. It's nice to maybe come away with a middle infielder in the first round who you really believe in and is really good, and then that takes the pressure off having to get as many middle infielders the rest of the way. Now, I do think second base is a pretty deep position this year, but in a roto league, you're probably going to need two because shortstop isn't very deep.
The second tier, you have two guys who really could not be more different as far as just style and what they bring. It's D. Gordon and Robinson Cano. On the preview, we have them 31 and 41. D. Gordon, before last year, 304 in 56 games, 228, 234, 289. Last year he hits 333, but a lot of that was in the first half. How convinced are you that D. Gordon is going to bring you more than just steals this year?
I think he can hit 290, you know, maybe 300, which is really helpful nowadays, for sure, when your team batting average is maybe in the 260s. So I think he's helpful. I would be surprised if he hit 265 or something this season. And that would make him, the concern with D. Gordon is obviously if he hits 265, he's missing a lot of trips to first base, which means he's going to miss out on some stolen bases. So I'm comfortable with, say, 290 and 50 to 55 steals. I wouldn't think that he'll go back in the 330 range or anything like that.
And then the other guy on there that we have 10 spots lower, that I'm just a shameless honk for, a guy that I thought got way too much heat last year. Robinson Cano hit 287, 21 homers, 79 RBI, 82 runs at second base. And that was dealing with some physical issues. I personally, even at his age at second base, like him to rebound a little bit. I have a personal belief that that's not decline, that was just a weird year. I like him a lot. Talk me out of that, or don't.
Yeah, I'm not going to, and I do feel like the price on Cano. I was never a Cano guy in fantasy. Like, I almost never owned him. I did feel at one time that he was being drafted too high because he didn't steal bases. I felt like his draft price was too high because he was going, you know, in the top 10 picks for some years. Now he's going, you know, third or fourth round, depending on the size of your league, and I can get on board with him as a fourth rounder. Like, he was very good in the second half, and I agree with you. I don't think this is a big decline. It's more maybe concerns about what the upside is with him in Seattle. Like, I don't feel like he's going to hit 27 or 28 home runs. Like, do you think that's a possibility? Do you think now we're just kind of looking at 20 homers, nice batting average, something in the 80s for runs and RBIs?
I think that's, I guess what I look at is that's basically what he did last year, and I expect a little more. I think you're right. I think 30 is probably pushing it, but 23, 24, 25, I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all if he gets back to 300. I mean, he was such a consistent and really 310 to 320 hitter for years. Wouldn't be surprised at all if he gets back to that. And so if he just is a little more consistent over the course of the year, gets a few more base hits, I think that's probably going to be a little bit better lineup. I can see him, you know, he had 79 last year in 82. I can see him bumping up to 90 and 90. I don't think that would be surprising at all. I'd be pretty happy with that.
Would you draft him over D. Gordon?
Well, part of that would depend on what I got earlier. If I got a speedster earlier, if I got somebody who was going to get me steals, then I might. I still don't think I would, but look, I'm a big D. Gordon skeptic. I have always been. I only grudgingly came around at the end of last year. I certainly wouldn't not have him, but I can't shake the idea that this was a one-year wonder, at least to some extent. I don't think he goes back to hitting 240, but I'm skeptical I think that was a career year. So I hate to draft a guy thinking he's going to repeat a career year rather than, I guess what I'm saying is I don't think D. Gordon made a leap. I think he had a career year.
Yeah, I mean, he was near the top of, like, ranking systems last year, like, first, second, third of all players in fantasy. So, I mean, yeah, we both believe he's going to regress a lot from that. I don't think someone would be crazy to take Cano over Gordon. Like, if you believe that Gordon's average will dip to the 270 range or something like that, where Cano would produce a much higher average, then I don't think it's necessarily a bad decision. I feel like the decision's actually maybe more about Gordon than it is about Cano. You can go either way with Gordon, and what's nice about him is you can basically lock up your steals in round like three with him and then draft your team the rest of the way knowing you have those steals. But if someone wanted to take Cano over Gordon, I don't think that's a crazy idea.
And look, part of it is that, you know, we have them 10 spots apart. If you think you can get somebody else you really like picking around 30 and you think you can still get Cano at 40, that's part of the equation as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the value in Cano maybe this year is his ADP. And I'm seeing him in drafts also settle in around some other bounce-back type players, but at other positions. Like, I'll see him maybe around Adam Jones, around Carlos Gomez. So maybe that's really your decision. If you want to take a bounce-back type guy in round four or maybe round five, it's whether you want to bet on Cano to bounce back or whether you want to go with one of those other guys. They're all quite similar, and they're similar ages and were similar types of draft picks last year and had disappointing seasons.
Go down to tier three, and there's a lot of names that I like a lot. You just said second base is deep, and all you have to do is look at this list and see the guys you have ranked tier three. Anthony Rendon, a guy who got some MVP votes a year ago. Rougned Odor, Ian Kinsler, Jason Kipnis, Brian Dozier. I think the two most interesting guys to me in that bunch are Rendon and Odor. Rendon is a guy who, again, was just an all-around star on the field for the Nats in 14. Couldn't stay healthy last year, and that was always the knock on him. But what I wonder about Rendon is, what exactly is his fantasy upside? Because he's one of those guys, he's going to hit some doubles, he's going to draw some walks, he's going to play he can play very good defense. He's going to be a great player at his best, but I'm not sure even at his best I see a great fantasy player. What's the fantasy upside for you of Rendon?
Yeah, his upside is hitting right in front of Bryce Harper. Like, to me, that's a huge part of the story with Rendon. Like, we're talking about Harper as, you know, in the discussion for being picked first overall, arguably the best hitter in baseball, and he gets to hit right in front of him. So I think the upside of him is that he plays 155 or 150 games, he gets on base a lot, and he scores over 100 runs, in addition to contributing, you know, in the other categories too, but that he's special in the run scored category if he gets back to that level he was at 2 years ago.
And the other guy in that list that gets my attention is Odor. I watched him in the postseason last year. I was on that Toronto-Texas series, and, you know, you hate to fall in love with a guy based on five games, but I watched him, and he's just one of those guys who can do everything. He's a guy who affects a game in so many ways. He's got some power. He's a really exciting player. Do you see a potential, well, I guess I should say, how much likelihood do you think Odor has of busting out of that group and maybe taking his place among some of the better second basemen in fantasy?
Yeah, I think it's very much possible. And like you said, we did fall in love with him a little bit in the postseason. But that being said, he was really good. After that brief demotion he had in the first half, he came back up in the middle of June. He was really good the rest of the way. I think out of that tier, he just really stands out as the player with the most potential to go up. The other guys, like you talk, Kinsler, Kipnis, Dozier, they're all solid, but they're all kind of the midpoints or just past the midpoint of their career and definitely like probably on the downside of their best season. So you can get one of those guys and expect really solid production, or Dewar's the one that kind of makes your eyes sparkle and think, okay, maybe I get a really special year out of him. At the same time, maybe has a little more downside because he still is really young. Like, this is the guy who joined the majors at a really young age. I would probably go with him over the veterans.
And there is some reason to be worried about the Rangers developing young players, honestly. They have had some trouble getting these guys to turn into the players they thought they were going to be. They've had a ton of talent, and some of these guys have not quite become what they hoped. I think it's at least fair to wonder about that. Tier 4, again, and we'll wrap this up very shortly because we've already gone on a good long time, but Tier 4, the names of Pedroia, Murphy, Wong, Zobrist. I am a shameless Colton Wong fan. He is one of my favorite players. Again, one of those guys I feel like does a lot of things. What is it that has him down there rather than in that next group with guys like Kinsler and Kipnis?
Yeah, it's his struggles against lefties last year and then their off-season acquisition of Jed Jerko. I mean, that's the concern, is that he either doesn't get the chance to face lefties a lot this season, or he gets off to a poor start to the season against lefties, and then they start bringing Jerko in a lot to play second base on that. In those circumstances, you know, once you start losing some playing time, you know, then that, like, if you become a platoon player, it's hard then to be, like, a top 12 second baseman when the position is pretty deep. You're right. In a good scenario, Wong gets a chance to play against lefties, hits them well, and is easily into Tier 3.
And I think, you know, one of the points you raised there, there is some history. When you look at organizations, there is some history of Mike Matheny falling out of love with young players. I mean, that's a very real worry there. The scenario you lay out, is there with any time you've got a young player and you've got a guy who sort of complements him? But I think it's particularly magnified with Mike Matheny. He's a guy who we have seen sort of forget about talented young players. I think that's a good point, that there is a real worry that Matheny just kind of falls out of love with Colton Wong and he becomes less of a regular player.
For sure, and like we've talked about many times, smart organizations like the Cardinals, before they traded for Jerko, they had an idea of how they were going to use him, and he does have some talents. So, and they, you know, they gave up John Jay, who I know they had an extra outfielder on the roster, but, you know, they picked Jerko as the guy they wanted. And when the trade happened, you immediately thought, huh, why would the Cardinals want to add another infielder, a second baseman? And then you start looking quite quickly, and the first thing that pops out at you is the splits. And you think, oh, well, I wonder if that's what they've talked about in their front office, is how they're going to handle the season. And then maybe Wong doesn't even get 500 at-bats.
That'll do it for the Fantasy 411 podcast this week. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. This time next week, we'll be talking spring training. Thanks, everybody, for listening.